From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. You're listening to Idaho Matters, a program that gave federal coronavirus grant money to groups and schools here in Idaho is under scrutiny from state lawmakers and the Idaho Attorney General. The Community Partner Grant Program was designed to address learning loss in children ages 5 to 13 that happened due to disruptions caused by the COVID pandemic. About 80 Idaho groups got those grants, from school districts in Marsing and Nampa to the United Way to the Boys and Girls Club. And that money was spent on children. But the Idaho Capital Sun reported last month that some lawmakers in the Idaho legislature raised concerns about the program. They're worried that some of the money might have gone to children under the age of 5 instead of that 5 to 13-year-old range. So those lawmakers asked Idaho Health and Welfare, which is in charge of this program, for an audit of where the money went. So let's fast forward to last week. This is when Idaho Attorney General Raul Labrador sent what's known as civil investigative demands, or CIDs, to all of these groups that got the grant, demanding all the records, including personnel lists, involved with the program. Yesterday, 35 of those school districts and nonprofits filed a complaint against Attorney General Labrador, saying his actions were, quote, overreaching and burdensome. So joining us today to talk more about this is Greg Chaney. He is a former Republican member of the Idaho House. He's also an attorney who's representing these plaintiffs. And Norm Stewart, the superintendent of Marsing Schools, who received one of those grants. I want to welcome both of you to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Also, a quick note, we did invite Attorney General Labrador or someone from his office to come on the program today and discuss this as well. They tell us, due to the short notice, they could not make it. So we're hoping to have them on at a later date to talk more about this. So with that said, Greg, I'd like to start with you. Can you quickly explain this lawsuit to the average person? Why are 35 plaintiffs upset with the Attorney General?
Well, certainly. And essentially, it comes down to the fact that what's going on here is the Attorney General is using a process that is simply not designed for an audit of a government program. It's designed to enforce consumer protection laws or to go after charities that are being deceptive, or even to enforce foundations if they're spending money in a way that isn't consistent with what they were founded for. It's not designed for this purpose, and it requires that the Attorney General have a specific reason, a specific target in mind, not only about who violated the law, but also what specific relevant information every person involved has. So long story short is this statute was never designed to be used this way. And if it was to be used, it was supposed to be very specific. So either the Attorney General assumes that all 80 participants are breaking the law, knowingly breaking the law, because that's what the statute says. He has to have reason to believe they're knowingly breaking the law. Or he has to have reason to believe they all have evidence of somebody else that's breaking the law, relevant evidence. And so I can't imagine that he honestly believes that 80 different organizations are breaking the law. And secondly, these things are incredibly, incredibly overly invasive and burdensome in the scope and the type of information requested. And it's just not consistent with either the statute or, frankly, the Constitution to just be going essentially indiscriminately demanding everybody turn over all their paperwork.
So Greg, can we for a moment talk about, as you say, how invasive this is? So we should note that the AG's office is asking for a lot of information from these 80 organizations and school districts. We're talking things like bank statements, tax returns, charts, meeting minutes, emails, texts, diaries, invoices, graphs, computer programs. That's part of the list. That's not even the entire list. They also want the names and the addresses of anyone connected with the grant in any way. So with all that said, Greg, how long do these groups have to get this information to the Attorney General's office? Because I would make the assumption that even if you were a phenomenal bookkeeper, it's going to take you a while.
Well, they've been given 20 days from the date of service, and the date of service for some was as early as the 3rd of March. But what we've seen is that some of the later service has not been done in the traditional way. It's been mailed, which is permissible. But I've spoken to somebody as early as today who received one today that was mailed out on the 7th of March. So they arguably have still only 20 days from the 7th, even though they just got it today, which would give them about a week.
Mm. Okay. Norm, I want to bring you into the conversation. As we mentioned, you are the superintendent of the Marcing School District. Tell us
Correct.
About yeah. your thoughts when you got this demand letter from the Attorney General's office. Were you surprised?
Oh, we were very surprised. I mean, when we applied for this grant, we were completely under the impression that we qualified for the grant. We submitted an application, we reviewed it, we submitted the application, we were awarded the grant, and then we have adhered to all the different requirements of the grant to meet the needs of our students. And so when we received our CID last Monday, it was a complete surprise to us. We had no idea that anything was taking place. And as that has come about, it definitely has created a lot of undue pressure. What I would view as undue pressure on my staff and the individuals here within our school district to have to find this information with a short timeline and to try to meet these demands when again from our perspective, we applied for a grant, we were awarded a grant, and we were trying our best to meet the needs of our students, and that was our focus.
So, Norm, how much money did you get through the grant, and how did you spend that money?
Well, we have, as far as for one of the phases of the grant, it was a little over $79,000, and that's being balanced out between a Jumpstart Summer School, which is focused on elementary kids, so it's 2 weeks of summer school right before our regular school year begins to really help with that learning loss and to help those students get up to speed so that they're ready to begin the new school year. And then we had other parts of it that did help fund our Husky Pup preschool when we do. And we have 5-year-olds in that preschool. And all of our students, by the time that they end their preschool year, are of age 5. And so from our perspective, and as we applied for the grant, we felt we met the requirements of the grant. And even the grant application really states that, do you serve as one of the qualifications? Do you serve ages 5 through 13? We do. And that is what we have been focused on, is trying to provide the best possible education that we can to our students mm-hmm. to meet the demands that we have before us, to try to make sure that parents who choose to seek early childhood education have that opportunity here within Marcing and within our school district. And so we've been trying to meet the needs of our kids the best that we can, and that's been our focus.
So Greg, this grant, you know, as we mentioned in the beginning of our conversation, is for children 5 to 13 years old. The Attorney General's office is, correct me if I'm wrong, making a claim that some of this money may have been spent on children who are 4 years old. Now, if the grant says 5 years old, I mean, I, the argument could be made, well, if they're 4, then that's not what the grant money goes to. So with that said, though, when you send out, I'm assuming, which will be 80 of these CIDs, it's kind of like you're fishing for something rather than, do you have concrete evidence that money was spent for children under 5 years old? Does that make sense?
That's exactly right, and that's our argument. They can't possibly have specific reason to believe each and every recipient has used the funds. And I do want to go back to something you said a moment ago. The grant doesn't say it's for ages 5+. The legislative intent language said that it should be, it must be used, or it should be used for children 5 to 14. The federal guidance says it's from 0 to 14. The grant criteria that the Department of Health and Welfare generated said, Just like Norm was saying a moment ago, that under five is okay so long as you include the older age group, as long as you serve the older age group. And that's the criteria the department set out and told people you're eligible if you meet these criteria. And that's the criteria people applied on, and that's the criteria people have followed. So really, it's not a matter that this is a cut and dry breaking of the law. This is more that there are people that aren't happy with how the Department of Health and Welfare interpreted their statutory instructions in how they distributed the money. I'm not aware of a single organization, not a single one of my clients has used this money in a way that's at all inconsistent with the guidance that the Department of Health and Welfare put out. And frankly, that's not my client's problem to go argue with, between the Department of Health and Welfare and the legislature on how to interpret and apply intent language. They did what the department told them they needed to when they got the money. And as far as I'm concerned, that should have been the end of it as it relates to my clients.
So, Greg, then where would this come from? Why would the Attorney General send this out? And I do want folks to understand that even with former Attorney General Wasden, these CIDs were sent out. This kind of is a regular process, but as you mentioned, more not for educational purposes. These were sent out for other issues, but this is a normal practice. So this is not something that is abnormal that these are being sent out. I think that's important for our listeners to understand. But with that said, is there a misunderstanding then of how this grant money is supposed to be used? Because as you said, legislators wanted 5 to 13, but if I'm understanding you correctly, that was not what the grant implied. It sounds like it was pre-K through 8th grade.
Well, the federal guidance allowed it to be from birth to about 8th grade.
Sorry, excuse me.
But even the state guidance in the appropriation statute didn't say it only could be used for ages 5 plus. There's other language in the same paragraph that uses the phrase only in relation to other conditions. But the word only, it doesn't appear in the sentence designating the age range. It's just required that it be used on programs that do serve those folks. Really, it's the legislature's job to approve this stuff. It's the department's job not only to interpret all of this stuff and decide what the guidelines are, but it's also their place to conduct an audit if one is necessary. And so, and the Attorney General, it's their job to represent the Department of Health and Welfare, frankly. And so I don't know why this would be necessitated. If the Department of Health and Welfare wants to review things, they can review things. If the legislature doesn't like guidelines they put in place, the legislature has options. There's really, and this is our argument that we're going to be making in court, there's really no scenario where this should come out in this context.
So, Greg, the Attorney General's office does tell Boise State Public Radio News that they will be sending us a statement on this case in the next couple of days. However, I do want to read a part of the statement that they sent KTVB yesterday. And they said that the CIDs were, quote, issued to obtain facts about what happened and to determine whether state law was followed. Our goal here is to provide full transparency to the people of Idaho. End quote. With that said, that's fair if they want to be transparent. I think everyone would appreciate transparency. With that said, though, Greg, where do we get into potentially murky waters from a legal standpoint if there is not any type of proof that they have been given? Or could the AG's office have proof these funds were misused, and that just hasn't come to light to the public, but they have it?
Well, here's our central argument that we're making in court. First of all, if they want to provide transparency, that's not frankly the role of the Attorney General's office. That may be an admirable goal in government to provide transparency, but it's the role in this case of the Department of Health and Welfare to oversee this program and to do any audits and to provide any transparency there needs to be done. It's the Attorney General's job to simply represent the Department of Health and Welfare, and they're not doing that in this case. And so they don't have an independent I guess, charged to be looking into this. But secondly, we don't allow police officers to just go house to house looking for something to charge somebody with and for a reason in this country, right? And that's essentially the analogy that I've drawn in our complaint is that this is going house to house, kicking open doors and sifting through people's paperwork. The statute requires, and I would argue also the Constitution requires, that you have some idea that the person who you are requesting information from actually has something to do with something that's wrong. Let's say for argument's sake, they do have some evidence of somebody's misuse. Well, then again, how can the other 79 people possibly have evidence of one participant's misuse? Because you need to have reason to believe that they have relevant evidence. And so they need to be digging into that one and let everybody else go along with their lives. And that's not even to get into the burdensome nature of the requests, but it's not to figure out if it was the law was violated. The laws that they're using to serve these require that they already have reason to already believe it was, and to believe that they're on the right track. And it does not authorize this house to house, filing cabinet to filing cabinet rummaging.
And with that said, Norm, I mean, is your school district going to even be able to comply with the demands of this CID in the short amount of time that you've been given?
Well, and that is going to be the challenge, because as we try to gather all of our all of the information and seeking as far as all the different components that would be required, it is going to be challenging. I mean, we're a small school district, and each of our staff members, because we are small, have multiple roles, multiple jobs that they're already doing. And this does create an additional burden above and beyond our mission of educating kids to have to try to gather and find all this information so we can submit it as per the demand. And I mean, even some of the demands of requesting for anyone who had ever had any affiliation, any review of the grant materials in the first place, to even request their own personal, as far as what affiliations they may have, from anywhere from what boards they serve on to what charitable contributions they've made. I don't see how those kind of demands really pertain to the objective at hand here, and why is that an important matter in regards to what they're trying to accomplish? And that seems a very, very much a personal overreach for staff members, for anyone within these our organizations, the different organizations that are involved. Why is that any business of the AG in the office in regards to this? So it's going to be, it will be a challenge, and it would take additional hours in order to meet these demands. So that would, and it will take away from the mission that we have, which is to educate kids.
Mm-hmm. I am out of time. I want to thank both of you so much for talking to us about this and for breaking it down. I know it can really get into the weeds. So I appreciate both of you taking time out of your days to talk to us about this. So thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, we've been talking with Greg Chaney. He is a former Republican member of the Idaho House. He's also an attorney who is representing the plaintiffs in a lawsuit against Idaho Attorney General Raul Labrador. We've also been talking with Norm Stewart, the superintendent of Marcing Schools, who received one of those grants in the program that is now under investigation by the Attorney General's office. As we mentioned, the Attorney General's office said they will be getting Boise State Public Radio News a statement in the next couple of days. We are hoping to be able to talk with them on our program in the future about this case and why they decided to bring this investigation up. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is Chip Brantley, co-host of the NPR podcast White Lies. Before we found the man in Vancouver, before we sued the State Department, before we snuck into the graveyard of a federal penitentiary, all we had were the photographs. Photographs of a group of Cuban men standing on the roof of a prison in rural Alabama. That's this season on the NPR podcast, White Lies.